One of Jim Sheeler's first assignments for the obituary section of the Rocky Mountain News was to cover the first Colorado citizen killed in the Iraq War. That single obit turned into a whole series in which Sheeler followed Marine Major Steve Beck, a casualty assistance calls officer, as he made the visits that every military family dreads. 5 years later, Sheeler's won a Pulitzer Prize and turned the series into a new book called Final Salute, A Story of Unfinished Lives. Jim Sheeler joins us now in the studio. Jim, thanks for coming in. We appreciate it.
Thanks tons for inviting me.
First, I would like to start the conversation by asking you to read an excerpt from your book. On page 9, there is a description of what Major Beck calls the knock and what happens after he gives the knock. Could you read that for us?
Sure. While each door is different, the scenes inside are almost always the same. The curtains pull away. They come to the door, and they know. They always know, Major Beck said. You can almost see the blood run out of their body, and their heart hit the floor. It's not the blood as much as their soul. Something sinks. I've never seen that except when someone dies, and I've seen a lot of death. They're falling, either literally or figuratively, and you have to catch them. In this business, I can't save his life. All I can do is catch the family when they're falling.
That is such a profound bit of this story. He ends up being so much more to these families. Major Beck is now Lieutenant Colonel Beck.
Correct.
Right? He ends up doing so much more than just showing up on doorsteps, giving the knock, giving the information. Let's listen to a clip as he describes some of his work. This is from an interview that was posted as part of this series on the Rocky Mountain News website. Let's take a listen to Major Beck.
Once notification has been made, it's about building trust and making sure that the family knows, regardless of their feelings for you, that you are there for them.
Is that the job description?
No, actually. He's taken there's a very basic script of the job description, and he's really added his own sort of life experience and empathy to it, which means taking care of the families, as he said, for as long as possible. And I mean, he says that when you do this, you have to treat those families as if they were your own. Treat that mother as if she were your own or your sister. And in reporting, I actually kind of took that as a lesson for me as well. You know, we have to talk to a lot of people in traumatic situations. And you know, if that was my mom or my sister, and there was a reporter standing there with that notebook, you know, who would I want that reporter to be? And that's the person you have to be.
Did he volunteer for this post as a casualty assistant calls officer? Or how did he fall into this work? Was he just tapped once and then he realized, oh, this is work I feel called to?
He was in charge of the base in Colorado, which also had the duty of informing families in Wyoming, South Dakota, and parts of Kansas. So he really it's just fell to him, and he took it on. And at one point during the Battle of Fallujah, the casualties were coming in 3 or 4 at a time, and I mean the Marines didn't even have time to take their dress blues to the dry cleaners. They would drive around in with lint rollers in their car.
And they just, as you write, they speed into the nearest quick store, gas station, and just change in there.
Right.
And Major Beck, in the middle of the night.
Yeah, Major Beck actually got the call one time when he was in an Olive Garden and had to go into the restroom, came out in his dress blues, and then had to go make the call.
He has to be incredibly astute at reading people's emotional composition. And when he knocks on these doors and talks to these families, he has to be able to deduce, do they want more of me or less of me? Do they want me to get the hell out of here because I have somehow become the Grim Reaper, or do they need me to stick around? And sometimes I imagine it's not so clear cut one way or the other.
Right. He's had families that have screamed at him, cursed him. He's had Marines who are slapped. He hasn't been physically assaulted himself, but you know, the gamut really does range with the emotions, and he does have to figure out the best way to handle the situation. And sometimes it is just letting the family scream it out, and he said he's willing to take that as the bearer, the messenger. And I mean, at one point during one of the notifications, One of the family members started screaming and cursing the president, and the chaplain who was with him actually said, ma'am, there's no need for that kind of language. And Major Beck said he had to take him outside and say, she can say anything she wants. Sure. You know, the president doesn't need our defense right now. We need to be here for this family. Telling a grieving widow what she can say or not say in her own home is not where we need to be. We just need to take care of them and allow them to express their grief in any way they need to.
Did you ever talk with him during your time reporting the story, following him around, about his opinions of the war?
Sure. He does believe in the policies, and but he doesn't let that show when he's with a family. He's definitely had to notify families who were against the war, and he still uses the same kind of compassion as he does with the families who immediately hug him and understand and have a military background.
We're talking with Jim Sheeler. He's the author of Final Salute, A Story of Unfinished Lives. And Jim, I want to ask you to read another excerpt from the book. This is a letter that was written by Jesse Givens, Private First Class Jesse Givens, to his wife and two kids, his wife Melissa. It's dated November 25th, 2002, and this is a letter. Describe it. This wasn't supposed to be sent to her, only under the circumstances of his death?
Right. He wrote several letters that were only to be opened in case he died. And these letters he wrote to his children are so heart-wrenching, you know. And even after the children read them, you know, Dakota, his oldest son, he asked his mom if you know, when he was going to be able to see his dad again. And he's still struggling with the reality of death. And she said, "Well, he's in heaven, and you'll see him when you go to heaven." And he said, "Well, when I go to heaven, can I still be 5 years old so that I can still play in the park with him?" Hmm. You know, there's these little just poetic moments that are everywhere, and they're happening every day. You know, with every knock, this is happening, and it just continues. It's been 5 years now, and, you know, I just saw Melissa, and she said that this was one of the hardest anniversaries of his death because it also marked the time that now she's officially known him dead longer than she knew him alive.
Wow. If you don't mind reading a bit from this particular letter that he wrote to Melissa and his family, November 25th, 2002.
"I ask that when you send soldiers into battle, that they are not just numbers. I ask that you see our roles as fathers, sons, daughters, wives, and husbands, as well as the proud Americans who want to serve our country. When all is said and done, will we, the United States military, shed blood or pass at the hands of our enemies for a just cause? Will you remember those who we leave behind and honor them as well as our fallen brothers and sisters?"
Which is really what you're trying to do with this book, is remember people this way, right?
Exactly.
There are also some amazing photographs in this book. For the most part, this is a very personal story about loss and the loss that military families suffer in this war. But one photo I thought really broadened the story out by capturing other people's reaction to bodies of soldiers being brought home. This is a photo. I'll let you describe this photo if you would.
Sure. The photo is taken by Todd Heisler, who was my partner, companion, confidant throughout this whole process, and he was there for pretty much everything I was, and
he also won.
He won the Pulitzer Prize as well for his photos. He's now with the New York Times. This photo you're speaking of was in Reno as we watched the airplane come in with the body of Lieutenant James Cathy, who we had followed his wife, and we were in the limousine with her when the plane pulled up. And as soon as the plane stopped, the people in the windows started looking at us, and they saw Catherine get out of the car, grieving widow, and below them, the flag-draped casket of the Marine. And it's amazing the way that people on the plane react. I mean, they're probably coming in for a business trip. This is Reno. They could have been coming in, you know, expecting to go gambling. And then they look out on the tarmac and they realize we're part of the war now. And Major Beck says that they'll remember that flight for the rest of their lives, and they should. It's something that finally you're forced to realize and take a step back and think, I just flew for the past 2 hours with a dead Marine underneath me.
Why was it important to include this picture in this book?
I think it really shows. For some people, it's the first time that they've had an emotional connection to the war, because so few of us have that emotional connection. I mean, it's often sort of drawn by political feelings one way or another, but the actual emotional connection where you can say, I felt it, you know, even the Marines, before they were doing the honor guard duty, one of them told me that you don't understand sacrifice until you pick up one of those caskets. You know, he said that, you know, the politicians will say, you know, we all need to do something, but you don't realize that until you pick up the casket and you feel that weight. And
literally it's, feel it.
Yeah, literally.
We will link to this photo on our blog so everyone can go check it out. I would imagine that spending so much time delivering this kind of news, I mean, you can't imagine the kind of weight that it became for Major Beck. How did he deal with his own grief and pain of being around these families and absorbing their pain? Where did he then put that so it wouldn't weigh him down?
I think he's still kind of trying to find a place for it. Even stepping back as far as I was, you know, it's infectious. You know, you feel it and you can't shake it, but you have to feel it in order for him, in order to do the job correctly, and for me, in order to write about it. You have to really get into that zone where you're feeling as much of that pain as you can. Of course, it's nothing compared to what the families are going through, but for him, I think part of it was talking about it with us. He didn't talk to his wife about it. I think that talking with the families, I mean, some of the families would just call him to talk. We were sitting at one of these airports waiting for a body to arrive, and I noticed on his cell phone that he had all the families' names on his speed dial, right next to his own family.
But he didn't want to talk about this stuff with his wife. Was it just too, he didn't want to share that burden?
He didn't. I think he didn't want to burden her with it. And I've found myself doing the same thing a lot of times. But for him, he didn't want to burden his family with it. And after his wife read the story, she said she learned a lot about him that she didn't know.
And what about how this has affected you? You've spent 4 years, more than 4 years, working on this, following these families, following Major Beck. How has this affected you?
It really did tear me up for quite a while, and it was really hard to write. But I think that writing it did help me to be able to write it out and kind of pour it out that way. But there's times, I mean, Catherine's scream on the tarmac there when she first saw the body, it's something that, I mean, I'll never forget it. And, you know, it's something I think all of us should hear, but nobody wants to.
The book is called Final Salute, A Story of Unfinished Lives. Jim Sheeler is the winner of the Pulitzer Prize, joined us in the studio today. Jim, thank you very much for coming in.
Thank you so much.
We appreciate it. Take care.
Thank you.
That's it for this hour of the BPP, but we don't go away online. We're there all the time at npr.org/Bryant Park. Thanks for listening. I'm Rachel Martin.
And I'm Mike Pesca. This is the Bryant Park Project from NPR News.